Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Stone Chapel Podcast. Today is part two of our conversation about the gender of God. This audio comes from a radio show that I do called A Show of Faith here in Houston, Texas, with a number of people. But the two people you're going to hear tonight are Father Mario Arroyo, who's pastor of St. Cyril of Alexandria Catholic Church. And then there's Rudy Kong, who's a wonderful guy. He's in the space industry. He works there. And he's a millennial who's studying theology, and he brings a different perspective we're really grateful for to the radio show. Now, our conversation continues this podcast with Amy Peeler, who's written a wonderful book called Women and the Gender of God. Because the audio comes from a radio show, it's going to sound a little bit uneven, and you're going to hear a few breaks that we've taken out for you. So it might seem a little disjointed at times, but I think it fits together the conversation works nicely. So here today, we're going to be continuing our conversation about the idea of the gender of God here on the Stone Chapel Podcast. As I was reading the book, I began thinking about, I've known a number of women through the years who've said, you know, I have a hard time finding my place in Scripture, with God being referred to as He all the time. God, He, God, He, God, He. I have a hard time finding my place. And I'm wondering, do you think your book is going to help women to find that place a little better?
That is absolutely my hope. And again, it's different than maybe those who would seek to press into the maternal metaphors for God. I'm really doing something different. I'm saying, consider the way in which God came. If God treats Mary with such honor and respect, if He invites her, I love, Father Mario, your language of co-creator, into this act of salvation, right, partnership, then if God treats her that way, she's not an exception, but she's a template. And so if her body is the site of the holy, if God says, yeah, you're going to influence and raise the son, if you're going to get to proclaim the good news to Elizabeth and at Pentecost, these are models that women, I hope, can look at and say, especially Protestant women like myself, can say, oh my goodness, she's a forgotten part of our story, but she really shows us how God treats women. That's what I hope, that people have this profound sense of embrace and inclusion in the Christian story by simply attending to the incarnation. God could have chosen salvation in any way, right? God is God, we can't understand. But God chose to enter the world through the body of a woman and by being shaped by a woman. There's a lot of power.
Dr. Amy.
Yes.
Do you find, I guess kind of to Father Mario's point, do you find that there's a lot of support out there for what you're putting out there for this message? Because what interests me is that within the Catholic tradition, too, it's sort of like the women, too, within are reaching these same conclusions, right? So it's happening from what I see.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, there's always that danger if when you write a book, you think that the whole world is thinking about the subject that you care about, right? There's that danger. Now, that being said, this does feel very timely. I have two examples for that. One, I teach a class on Mary with a colleague in art history. We've taught it now 5 times. And our students, which are largely Protestant, low church evangelical, they're beaten down the doors to get in this class. We have a lengthy wait list every time we teach it. So there's this hunger to pay attention to this narrative, to pay attention to this woman. On the other side, with Me Too and Church Too, and this has hit all denominations, there is this awakening, this kind of realization happening, which has happened in other periods of history too, but it is a really timely moment that people are still wanting to learn more and learn how to think theologically about male and female. And so I'm very grateful to have written at a time that I'm kind of able to join in that wave.
Dr. Amy Peeler is with us to talk about her book, Women and the Gender of God. One of the things I would encourage people to do is to read the section, Because you write really well about the virgin birth and some things that you say about that and helping people think through what the Gospels are trying to do and the Gospels writers are trying to do when they talk about that. It really is good. So here's a couple of the titles. The Father Who Is Not Male, Holiness and the Female Body, God Is Not Masculine, The Male Savior, Honor and Agency. It's not a long book. It's about 220 pages altogether. But anyway, thank you, Amy, for being with us tonight on Show of Faith to talk about your book. And I hope it goes well. Blessings on you.
Thank you all so much. It's really a joy to get to talk about something I'm passionate about. And I hope it's a benefit for anyone who's able to read it.
Remarkable woman. Really, yes. Really bright. Mm-hmm. And the sections that she's written on the virgin birth, I thought were really excellent. Thinking through God's connection with Mary. And the Imago Dei, the image of God in humanity. My sense is she ends up in a fairly orthodox place with
That's
all
what she
this,
said.
With the need to maintain that, but just sort of to blow out those barriers a little bit and to get people to rethink what gender means and to not to limit. You know, the God that we know and we worship and we serve is not male or female.
That's right.
I mean, it's beyond gender. But as I said before, I don't think we have a category for that. No. Beyond gender. It's like beyond time. I mean, you can say beyond time, but how do we plug that in? How do
either
we
that or
that?
Would it be interesting to push the other way for God to be the fullness of gender?
Okay.
In the scriptures, it says male and female, he created it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what if God is the fullness of maleness and femaleness? And what would that look like? Because in order for us to be in his image and likeness, I don't want to lose the gender and the sexuality part, because I think that that can lead us into a real fruitful development and clarification and sanctification of the image of sex.
And the two becoming one.
And the whole marital understanding, Christ loves the church the way a husband loves a bride, you know, that whole bridal imagery that is constantly used in the scriptures. And also, for example, the Song of Songs and how indeed extremely gender-specific the Song of Songs is.
And it really is about the beauty of sensual expression.
That's right.
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting way of framing it rather than saying God is not limited by gender. Maybe God, think about it in terms of God is the fullness.
The fullness of maleness and femaleness.
Right, right.
That we are in some way reflecting the nature of God in our female and maleness.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting.
And not just in our roles as father, protector, not mother, nurturer, those kind of things, but beyond that.
Rudy, what do you think?
Wholeheartedly agree. And I think to Dr. Peeler's point, when you start looking at Mary and you start understanding the filial relationships, if you will, or the way that you can bring down theologically what those reveal about creation, life, motherhood, fatherhood, being a good son, daughter, it's just a great fountain of wealth. And I think we should continue to not to take away from Jesus, but Mary is an important piece of the puzzle.
Yes.
And she must be given her due. If
ultimately, see, the way I always see this is that in our desire to emphasize the role of Jesus, which is irreplaceable, he is the main, but we don't want to cut Jesus off from his body because he is the head of the body. And so to be able to say that because he is human, he belongs to the human race. And so therefore, I don't want to cut him off and make him so different from us that he is. You know, I hear this all the time. When you say anything about Jesus, people say, well, that's Jesus. You know, he could do anything he wanted to. But his humanity, his sexuality, the femininity and masculinity, I think I would rather lean into them than try to diminish them.
Well, you know, part of the challenge is today we have phrases like toxic masculinity.
Yeah.
And on the other side, toxic femininity as well. Those are obviously extremes. So to say, talk about God in the masculine, talk about God in the feminine, but to do it in a redemptive way.
That's right.
Because I think I understand what the term toxic masculinity can mean, or toxic femininity can mean. that clearly doesn't mean that to be masculine is therefore to be toxic.
No.
It's just the way of being.
And, but it's interesting because if you say toxic femininity and toxic masculinity go the opposite route, what would be sanctifying masculinity mm-hmm. and what would be sanctifying femininity?
In its pure form.
Yes.
And it's right and just and yeah. and good form.
It is an interesting thing that I have been really trying to imagine the world and creation before the fall, you know, and the whole notion of why it was the very first thing that Adam and Eve noticed is that they were naked. Why is that the very first thing? And what went wrong in their relationship to their own bodies and to their own identity, to their masculinity and femininity, that the concept of nakedness, because God, mm-hmm. when God says, who told you you were naked? I mean, you don't need anybody to tell you you're naked. But evidently, the concept of nakedness had not existed. Mm-hmm. In some way or another, mm-hmm. why would God ask them, who told you?
Right.
Because there was something that went wrong with their vision of masculinity and femininity and their unification in the way that they were created in God mm-hmm. that made this toxicity enter into that.
I was thinking on the other side of this, how when Jesus discusses kind of the future, at one point he said, "In the age to come, we won't be married or given in marriage."
That's right.
Right. So people have puzzled over exactly what does that mean, but I don't think that means that we lose that fullness of masculinity.
No, I don't.
Or fullness of femininity.
Jesus certainly didn't.
No.
When in the resurrection of the dead, he was Jesus. He was himself.
Wasn't an angel. Come back as an angel.
The only thing I always say about the resurrection is he said, every hair in our head is counted. And I'm bald. I want to count all of mine. I want them back.
You want all that hair back, right? Yeah.
Okay, that's the end of part two of our podcast on the gender of God. Thanks especially to Father Mario Arroyo, Rudy Kong, and Amy Peeler for being a part of that conversation. Thanks as well to Kathy Capes, who edits this conversation, and a special shout out to Phil Keggy for the wonderful music that he created just for this podcast. Thanks, Phil. We're grateful to some new listeners that I heard about who are living in Spain. Thank you for listening to the podcast. We hope you find it helpful, and please do share it as you can with friends, other friends there in Spain and the countries around you. Look forward to that. Now, the Stone Chapel podcast comes to you as a part of the work of the Lanier Theological Library in Houston, Texas. Be sure to check us out at laniertheologicallibrary.org. And when you are in the States from Spain or any other place, be sure to come by and see us. We've got a wonderful facility here. We've been adding on this last couple of years. The new Learning Center has opened, and it's just an exciting, exciting time for us. So stay tuned for more of the Stone Chapel podcast coming your way this time next week. Thanks for listening.